There's a man here who's just so well known around the nation, around the world, because of what he's done in the lab here at Cornell. And for this book that he put out called Mindless Eating, which describes many of us, I'm afraid. Would you welcome, please, Dr. Brian Wansink. From the Cornell lab here, the Food and Brand lab. Food and Brand, is that right?
Oh, man, we are wired that way, yeah.
Yeah? We're wired that way?
Oh, yeah, it's incredible. Almost everything around us points us in the direction of eating more and more and more.
Yeah.
But, you know, a decision about how much cereal you pour in your bowl isn't something you consciously go, one spoon, two spoon, three spoon, no way. So it's something as simple as the size of the bowl ends up leading you to serve yourself 22% more, and you don't even know it.
Oh. What was the question, Brian? I don't know. There was a great answer, but I don't remember asking you a question. Did I have some? What are you doing there, John? Oh, very nice, John's working here part-time as an engineer. That's appreciate it. So, okay, now they kind of like built this lab for you because, let's face it, you're kind of like a rock star in food and brands.
Yeah, you know, but it's more like being at the apex of dorkdom, the thing that Amy is talking about earlier. It's just that if you're a professor, it's not an apex. It's sort of a plateau.
Uh-huh. Yeah. All right.
You kind of get there and you stay there.
Yeah. Oh, but a lot of places wanted you. I know that. Where were you in Illinois?
Dartmouth?
Dartmouth.
Wharton School of Business?
Yeah. And they lured you here with this. Now, I have just imagined this laboratory as being a pretty strange place. I mean, what goes on in this food laboratory that you have?
Well, it looks exactly like a person's house would look.
Yeah.
If a person's house had one-way mirrors, and if you had like hidden cameras, and if you had like scales underneath tables that when you ate,
endless bowls of soup, is that part of the lab experience?
Endless bowls of soup.
Yeah,
that's
a
right.
Tube running in there.
That's right.
Did you do that?
Yeah.
What were you trying to do? You torture people about food, right?
It's
a torture.
It's incredible, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, one of the things that goes on is if you ask most people why they overeat, we do this for French people, and French people say the reason they eat too much at dinner time, or they know when to stop eating dinner, is when they're full or the food's no longer tastes good.
Yeah.
We asked the same questions of Chicagoans, and they said, we know we're through eating dinner when the plate's empty, everybody else is through eating, or the TV show I'm watching is over.
Right. Okay.
So we set up
the
study.
So what, are the French better then?
Yeah, just ask them. We set up this study where we...
That's interesting, though, because the whole thing about the French is, why are they so thin? They eat, I mean, French food, they have like 7 courses in a typical meal, and cheeses and all this stuff.
But they chain smoke, they walk to the metro, they've got refrigerators about the size of this telephone.
Yeah.
So, you know, they can't stuff them
And their
full
showers are ridiculous, too, but that's not neither here nor there, you know. If that is a shower, that thing, and I don't know. So it's not a genetic thing. It's just that they, culturally, they know when to stop.
Well, no, but also their entire environment's set up in a way that's going to give them eat less.
Yeah.
You know, they can't go to Sam's Club and drive an SUV of, like, you know, 74-pack things of Cheetos back to their house. There's nowhere to put them.
Well, then I don't want to live there. The hell with it.
That's right.
It's not so great after all. No Sam's Club. But it's been changing, though, since they've gotten more Americanized, more like fast food and stuff from America.
Have they
gone up in the obesity rankings and all that?
They're a little upset we're number one in that area. They're trying to catch up.
Now, what's this thing about the size of your plate?
Well, how much do you serve yourself? Who knows? It's whatever amount looks right. If you've got a 12-inch plate or a 10-inch plate, let's say a 10-inch plate, you put 3 or 4 ounces of spaghetti on, you kind of go, now that's a portion.
Yeah.
That same 4 ounces on a 12-inch plate, geez, I mean, that doesn't look like anything but an appetizer. So what do? You add another ounce. But in both cases, you think you're eating a full plate of food.
Yeah. And our servings, in restaurants, are they too big in America? Are they just, you're going out there for your food dollar, you expect a plate of food.
But God, yes, it's a great deal if you want value for your money. If you're on a diet, it's not a great deal.
No.
So don't go out to eat, I guess.
Yeah. And are you behind the lack of trays in the?
Yeah, well, that's interesting. We did a study about that, and people kind of go, people say, if you don't have trays in dining halls, people will eat less. It's like, you know, well, we did a study, and guess what they eat less of? You've got 2 hands. You would typically get a salad, an entree, and a dessert. What do college kids leave behind? Yeah, that's exactly right. They leave the salad behind. Yeah. So they eat a little bit less, but they eat less of what they should be eating more of. So that's
so it's backfired on you.
Yeah, well, we didn't recommend it in the first place, but yeah.
No, well, I thought
it backfires in general, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was totally you.
And the other thing...
Yeah,
well,
you recommend smaller plates, though, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You're behind that thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have an interest in a plate company or... Oneida, do they make
start
plates?
One. Yeah. Actually, we're starting something called the Smaller Plate Movement. So,
you know, now you're
smallerplatemovement.org. No, I'm not.
No, okay.
I'm not.
I'm
pairing up with the American Dietetic Association.
Oh, and smaller plates.
Yeah, big deal.
Yeah. The Smaller Plate Movement? Yeah, is this like the Tea Party now? Is taking on a life of its own, getting political?
Stuff. Yeah,
are you running candidates for the Smaller Plate Movement or convention or anything? Yeah.
No convention started yet.
Yeah, we'll probably tend that way.
I'm liking the idea of New Orleans, though. That'd be a place to have a convention.
A person will eat an average of 92% of any food that they serve themselves.
Well, basically, if you put it on your plate, you feel compelled to eat it.
Yeah.
Okay. And
wouldn't you, though?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. So if anything causes you, bumps you into putting more on, whether it be what the guy next to you is doing, whether it be the music that's going on, whether it be the lighting or the size of the plate, you know, you're going to, like, just eat it. You're not going to say, well, I believe I'm full. No, you're not going to do that. You're going to eat till it's gone.
Eat till it's gone. Yeah. But aren't our mothers telling us from day one, you don't leave this table unless
you clean your plate?
Well,
this is really cool.
Plate club?
What about that club? Well, we did a study about this with 4-year-old kids.
Yeah.
And then what we did is we asked their parents the extent to which they insist that their kid clean their plate.
Yeah.
And if a parent did that, what happened the very next day at school was that these little kids would not only serve more cereal for the snack, but they'd end up taking more desserts at lunchtime, because this is actually a time when they can actually control their food choices, because they sure as heck can't do it at home.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the second about after learning that, I think everybody in my lab who's got kids said, hey, we're not going to make anybody clean their plate from here on out.
Oh, so if we could eliminate mothers then, would that go a long way towards eliminating obesity?
The scourge of all obesity.
They're like pushers, right?
You know, and it's a gateway drug.
My mother always have a piece of fruit. She always have another piece. You know, take. You know,
it may be a gateway drug. It goes from milk to Cheetos.
Now this thing here. Now, a person makes an average excess of 250 decisions about food each day. That seems high.
It seems crazy, but the thing is, it's not just do we want Fruit Loops or do we want Special K.
Yeah.
It's how much we pour. It's whether we add skim milk or whole milk, whether we have seconds or thirds.
And what you feel like eating. You mean like that, too? And what do I feel like? Do I feel like
this or that? But it's also a decision. You say, geez, I'd really like to have a Diet Coke. No, I don't think I'm going to get one. Yeah. That was a food decision right there.
Yeah.
And the fact that we are aware of so few of these, that's where we get nudged into doing these things that we're totally unaware of.
That's where the mindlessness comes in.
Exactly.
Yes.
Even though we believe we're master and commander of what we're thinking.
Yeah. Okay. Now, if we were more mindful, I know that's what you're talking about with this small plate club.
No.
That you started. More mindful, a Zen kind of mindful.
No,
eating.
No.
One bowl.
No.
Years ago in the 70s. Let me finish. Years ago. I'll let you talk. Didn't even ask you a question. You started talking. Let me finish. In the 70s, you know, we were doing all that cool stuff with sex and drugs and everything, and the one bowl thing. You remember that? One bowl. There was a book on it. One bowl, and the idea was to get one bowl, and all your meals come from that bowl, and that's mindful eating.
A big neutral loaf. Yeah, no, that would not be even worth doing. The problem with mindful eating for most of us is that we have day jobs. We've got things we have to think about. We can't just, like, taste a pea and kind of go, feel the texture of the pea.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, no, instead, we just need to reorient our kitchen, our table, so that we mindlessly eat less rather than mindlessly overeat all the time.
Yeah. Well, what's going on now in the lab? Or can't you speak?
I'll tell you something cool. We just finished this study a short time ago where we looked at how the depictions of the size of food has changed over the years in depictions of the Last Supper. We showed that.
Oh, yeah, that was yours. All this stuff is coming from you guys.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the things we found,
servings in the Last Supper are much larger than they used to be.
Like 69% larger.
69%. They supersized the Last Supper.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So what we did was we had indexed the size of the portions, the plates, and the bread by the size of the heads at the Last Supper.
Oh, yeah.
Right up.
And Judas, his plate was stacked.
Man.
It was stacked.
He was there to party, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, one of the things we're doing something next week that's kind of cool. It's Cornell reunion. We're having all these people come in to see things. We've got these big receptions going on. One of the things we do is we hired two actresses. They're twins. Young girl, very thin.
I don't know
girls.
If I want to hear this. Are you sure you want to be telling me this?
Well, we hired these two girls, yeah. And one of them we have an inflatable fat suit, so we can make her look like she is massive.
You guys have too much time on your hands at that lab there. You know?
Yeah. And
a fat suit for a thin girl, and then.
Well, these people are going to be in two different buffet rooms serving the food, and we're seeing how the weight of a waitress or waiter influences how much you decide to take at a buffet.
How much the weight of the weight person affects how much you take at a buffet?
Yeah, exactly.
And what are you expecting to find?
Well, we've actually done a pilot study, and what we find is that if a very heavy person is serving you, what happens is you take more of the less healthy food. You'll eat a lot more calories. And if it's healthy food, you just kind of go, oh, no way, I'm not taking that.
Yeah.
So you end up overeating tremendously if the weight of the person is heavy.
Did you do the waitress study with the bosoms?
That wasn't
the waitress
me.
Bosom
that was,
study?
That was a buddy, though, yeah.
Was that in your lab?
It wasn't in my lab.
Yeah. Okay. How does this stuff get funded? So that's what I want to know.
You know, the vast majority of it's just self-funded. We don't get government grants for it.
No, not for, waitress bosom study. You know, how'd you even write it up? And, I can't see it in a paper even. Isn't it hard to write up some of these things in a paper without,
Yeah, actually, that was published in the waitress study was published in a good paper. And all these things get published in great medical journals, nutrition journals, psych journals.
And they found also if you draw a heart over your name on the check, you get a better tip. Isn't that the same one? I think so. And if you crouch down next to the table,
that's the same guy.
But for guys, there's nothing you can do if you're a guy waiter. Nothing
it's
you
just
can do.
Hopeless.
Yeah, you're lost, pretty much. Nothing you can do. Give good service, that'd be different. That'd be cool. Does any of this have military implications?
Well, interestingly, it actually does. I'd taken a sabbatical about 5 years ago to redesign the meals ready to eat. They're called MREs. It's what the people
in
the
fields. Those terrible things they always talk about.
Because they've got the opposite thing when people are deployed in the field than we do. They don't overeat. In fact, they stop eating altogether.
Yeah, I could see that.
And so we figured out ways to redesign it so that once people opened it, they'd basically eat a higher percentage of the MRE. So, it does have some applications.
Maybe if a thin, attractive sergeant serve them their MREs, they would eat it more.
But they couldn't tell anything. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. So it has defense implications. It's really, and the book is, this must be like a bestseller. Were you on Oprah with this?
Or a lot of things, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
19 languages. So.
Yeah. Did you help Oprah at all with her yo-yo problem?
No.
Maybe her plate sizes keep changing or something. She's got one set of small plates, one set of big plates, and she keeps switching back and forth. Dr. Juan Sink, thank you so much for being with us. Fascinating.
Please.
Get the book, Mindless Eating, and check out what's happening in the lab. You're going to hear about it one way or another.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. A pleasure. Dr. Brian Weinsink, author of Mindless Eating. Oprah says Brian Weinsink's discoveries might very well change your life.